Hello, this is Patrick Neiman from usabilityaccounts.com. This is the fifth podcast. Today, we have Kim Proctor, who is a marketing professional and consultant based out of Los Angeles, California. Her background is the web marketing director of the Christian Science Monitor, and she also has another 13 years of marketing experience. So, Kim, tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Sure. Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, so a lot of my focus is on a relationship side of marketing. So I do have a variety of marketing experience, background in industries, but really focus on how is it you build relationships that last, not just how you can acquire new customers, because that's the more expensive proposition here, but really how is it you can grow your business by communicating with your existing customers and by developing relationships with those customers, which can lead you to repeat business with them, referrals from them to new customers, positive word of mouth, like, you know, even on the internet, wherever they tell their friends and spread the word. And so my emphasis is really on helping people maintain, develop, advance customer relationships, whether they do that online or offline. I do and have a focus on all of that.
Great. And the reason that we're focusing on this is that you haven't read the newspapers in the last 8 or so months. We're in the middle of a recession. And most user experience professionals and a lot of marketers should realize that the best way to grow a business is to get the customers to come back, because new customers are much more expensive than, say, returning customers. So what are some of the, with some of the clients that you've had, what are some of the demonstrations that you've shown how returning customers are easier to market to than new customers?
Sure. I think a lot of it is in kind of how you focus your business. It's pretty economical, let's say, to build relationships, to really listen to customers, to gather their feedback, to find out what they most need and how you can meet that need. That's a lot more economical than having customers come in the door and out the back door, in and out. I've got clients that spend as much as $800 to acquire one new customer. It just does not make sense to really focus only on acquisition. So businesses that can focus on client service, client relationships, retention, have a lot better chance of saving money and growing actually faster. I'll give you two other numbers that were interesting with clients that I've worked with in terms of focusing on the service, customer service, customer experience, and really delivering on that. I've had folks save as much as 20% to 40% and almost 50% of their marketing budget has been reduced because they did not have to pay to acquire new customers to replace those they lost.
Have you ever worked with a client where they actually segmented their marketing budget? This is the money that we're going to spend to attract new customers, and this is money that we're going to spend to re-engage existing customers.
Wow, gosh, I really wish they did that. it doesn't often come that way for clients or businesses that I meet. More often, they kind of have a big marketing pool, and they're just kind of going with the traditional allocation, which is let's spend as much as possible on customer acquisition. Let's support all of that. And there tends to be fairly little on the relationship end, and even goals, metrics, budget associated with relationships and retention, which is why I think there's a huge opportunity right now for businesses to step in and even really become a smarter, stronger business by doing just what you propose, really thinking and making goals and assigning budget to retention and relationship strategies.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really important too, emphasized for our audience, is that when you're talking about the relationship management, it's not only crafting a message on the website, but it's also talking to the customer service representatives. Have you ever worked with a client where you had the overall strategy? What were some of the key points that you really hit on with them?
Sure. In terms of strategy and support of kind of customer relationships and retention, you definitely have got multiple elements, one of which you've just touched on, which is customer service. That can't be understated. Customer service typically is oriented to being about transactions. And I've actually managed and been a director of customer service. So I firsthand have seen that numbers that drive that kind of business is really how fast you can get off the phone. And the place that I worked before I stepped into position, people were, excuse me, the employees were hanging up on customers to meet their numbers, meaning how fast you could get off the phone. So you definitely have got to look at what I consider kind of every touch point where you engage with customers. They're reaching out to you or you're responding to them. And often that's coming in the forms of such things like customer service, marketing, so outbound communications, newsletters, advertising. We're also talking about delivery through the website. What is the website experience? How is that supporting existing customers? I mean, there's a lot of ways that and a lot of places that communication happens, and where that happens is where you can be focusing on relationships and retention. And so it really goes all the way down to an employee level in multiple departments. Anyone who's touching a customer, anyone in sales, anyone, even billing. If your billing office talks with customers, that's a place where you could be focusing on relationship building instead of just transactions.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm actually on your website, which is customers@click.com, great URL. You have a case study on there about lowered customer attrition. And what were the two touch points in, basically you mentioned in the case study, there were two touch points that were unnecessary and two touch points where the customer was not supported enough. What were the touch points?
Sure. Yeah, in this business, it was actually a cleaning franchise, right? So a maid service franchise. And they're all over the United States. And they were following a process whereas, obviously franchisees kind of follow the routine that's provided to them. And what it seemed like was we were looking at each of the touch points is they were communicating when they really there was nothing to be gained from it. They made two extra phone calls to customers every time they had service, and they were kind of in advance of the service themselves, and they never connected with customers. They never actually learned anything, and come to find out, customers didn't even really want these communications. They were just kind of pointless. And then it seemed like where they were missing out was one on the back end after service was delivered. They were totally missing an opportunity to listen and gather feedback. And there was another touch point which was kind of variable, I guess you might say, but when they had employee turnover, they lost customers because they were not communicating what was going on and the preferences between what I've already set up with your first employee that used to come and clean my house, and now you're sending out a new employee who does not know my preferences and everything that I'm looking for and all my foibles. And so we added a touch point at the back of each service to make sure we were really delivering on what customers expected. And then we added another touch point that surrounded kind of changes in employee status, really, when people would either, shifted off working for that particular client or such, and they were able to then really step up kind of a better communication in advance of that change. And then, of course, after the cleanings, they had a step that we added in there as well. So it was a little kind of happened at multiple points here in the process, but what they realized is to stop making two of the phone calls they were making and instead put them where they had attrition going on.
A lot of it is communication, but it seems in a lot of situations you actually affect the culture of the company that is your client.
True, that is true. Because really, this kind of effort is not just it's not just a tactic. It's not just, oh, let's add email newsletters and now we have relationships, or now we're, doing more to listen to our customers. It really is a mental, strategy and force and effort to make this happen, to support kind of customer relationships and retention. And it has to come, at every level in an organization. And so I actually do work a fair amount with internal communications. What are the expectations, for example, of your employees? Do they know what you expect and how you want them to deliver the customer experience? Do they know they're supposed to respond to every customer email in 4 hours or less? Or have you never actually told them that, and so they just respond in 24 hours or less, And in fact, at that 24-hour mark, customers begin to have a negative experience with a brand, so they really should be doing 4 hours or less.
For like email communications, for example, the 24-hour versus 4-hour or less, do users really have that much of an expectation of being contacted that quickly? And another question would be, when should an email be used versus when should you really offer the customer a choice of calling them through like a customer service center?
Okay, sure. Happy to answer both those questions. The first question, how quickly should you respond to customers? The answer is yes. They want a response in 4 hours or less. That's actually what customers want. And if they don't get that, basically their dissatisfaction with your company grows on an hourly basis. So by the time you hit 24 hours, which seems completely reasonable, right, you think, oh, okay, 24 hours, I'll respond the next day. They're actually beginning to have a negative experience with your brand. So, for example, if you have a contact form on your website, someone submits it, and they don't hear back within several hours, they're starting to think, this company's never going to respond. They don't care about my business. I'm going somewhere else. Why haven't they responded to me? They're filling in the gap with all these negative thoughts. And it's, after 24 hours, you're on the bad list. They already are, you know, potentially blogging that how come this company isn't responding to me or telling their friends. And this is because many companies do not respond to customers at all. Let's say through the web contact form. Up until very recently, the numbers were, you know, as much as 90% of people who sent in emails through websites were never responded to. So customers have a history of being ignored and being put on hold, and I mean, it's just not a positive experience for most people. So if you want to actually retain a customer and impress them, respond to an email in 4 hours or less. And I'm talking customer service emails, as well as, you know, emailing directly to any, let's say, contact that's internal to a company that a customer or client might have. And to respond to your second question, when should you offer email or phone? I'm a big proponent of offering multiple options as often as possible. Meaning, if you can put a phone number on your website as well as an email option, I'd encourage you to do so because different customers have different preferences. Unless you know that your client base or customer base has no interest in the phone, you really should provide it. That is the type of thing that customers appreciate. They go on your website, they're looking for a phone number, and they actually find one, you're on the good list. They go to your website and they don't find one and they wanted one, they're off somewhere else looking for somebody else that can help them, and they're going to call that other company or that other resource to help them move forward. So I
Yeah.
certainly say offering more is better.
Yeah. There's always this fight between the cost of actually having customer support people versus how responsive do we want to be with our customers. And a lot of companies on the web specifically leave out a phone number off their website because they just don't have the staff to handle all those calls. How do you advise companies to handle that situation where they just don't have the type of product having a phone number on the website?
I think whatever you can offer, you do need to do well. So, for example, if you're saying, you know, an organization just cannot afford to staff a call center, I mean, calls cost a lot more to handle than emails. I mean, there's statistics like a kid talk, excuse me, there are statistics like it costs $8, $10 to answer each phone call versus $1 for an email. So I certainly understand if an organization only provides an email address. Here's what I could say. As you know, consulting on that would really be make sure that that service fits into the window that I described earlier, which is a 4 hour or less turnaround would be ideal. If you have to do as much as 24 hours, I would not exceed that number. So if you're going to offer email only service, make it good. Make it really good. Make your answers relevant, your tone friendly, and respond to customers definitely in 24 hours or less.
So, to even drive home that point a little bit more, for example, if you can only offer email, if you give some kind of notice on their website, for example, that we will try our best to respond within 24 hours. Do customers respond to that?
If do not put that up there if you're not really going to do it. That's what I would say. If you can say that, great. We're going to be within 24 hours or less. Go ahead and put that on your contact form or the screen that comes up after you submit the confirmation, or excuse me, submit the form and see a confirmation page. Go ahead and put that information on there. That is fine, and that is a positive because it sets something in their mind. Okay, as long as I hear back in the next 24 hours, okay. I at least know that's normal for them. If you don't make that most of the time, then please take that text off the website because, unfortunately, it will actually do more damage than not saying anything at all.
How often do you walk into a client and they have no idea how much they're spending to acquire each customer?
That's normal.
Like 75%?
So, 75%. Like 90% of the 75%, 85% of the time. Businesses I run into do not know how much it costs to acquire one new customer.
How do you go about helping them get to the point where they actually know that cost?
Well, it's definitely an exercise in marketing analysis kind of thing. It is understanding everything you're doing and the cost of all of those outbound activities. So, okay, we're doing pay-per-click search engine. You know, we're paying for that. We're paying for ads in our local newspaper. We're also paying for banner ads, and we paid for an ad on Facebook. You add up everything you're doing to attract customers. How much is that costing your business? Very easy to look at the hard costs, meaning I know I spent this much on ads on Facebook this month, $2,000. At a minimum, add up all those hard costs, how much you are literally spending outside your business to drive customers to you. You've got to know that. If you can, additionally, add any soft numbers like how much you spend in marketing staffing, that's a nice thing to have as well because people cost money, of course, too. And really it becomes looking at how much you spend in that outbound activity and then how many people actually respond to that activity. So, okay, from my Facebook ad for a month, I got one new customer. So if I said that cost me $2,000 a month, it just cost me at least $2,000 to acquire that one new customer.
All
right. So it's a division of how much you're spending by how many customers you actually get. Gives you a sense of I'm spending this much to get each one to come in the door, and it's an average, so you're often.
So, and the other thing, it's not only about getting the repeat customers to come back, but it's also getting the repeat customers to refer other customers.
That would certainly save you an additional money, exactly that. Because once you have a customer, maybe they'd only buy from you four times a year. Whatever it is you're providing, that's the most they could actually need. But if they could tell 10 friends, and those 10 friends, let's say you get half of them, and they buy four times a year, that's how many sales you just got out of acquiring one customer. Me, let's say. So if I'm the one and I told 10 friends and five of them respond, it costs you nothing to get me buying four times plus five of my friends each buying four times. So the cost of acquisition for me, let's say that was even $800, I just brought you four times the sales for me and then I just brought you 20 sales from my friends and it still only cost you the original $800. So it's definitely... There's a big value in investing in relationships for that exact reason, Patrick. It is not just me, that one customer, it's everyone they know that they may be influencing to look into your business.
So basically that one customer touch point is actually worth, could potentially be worth 20 customers, for example.
That's exactly right.
And in kind of a social media way, it's a way of having the customers have the conversation for you. So instead of you doing the marketing, they do the marketing for you.
That's exactly right. It's the kind of the old traditional what's called word of mouth. You know, I mean, you don't have to pay people, and please do not pay people, to spread positive word about your business, to tell other people. I can tell you right now that probably 10% of anyone who's listening, 10% of your clients or customers are telling their friends about your business, because that's very normal for about 10% of Americans to really share what they know, share what they like, share what they don't like with their friends. And so there's actually a way to figure out who those 10% are. That's part of the work that I do. And becoming friends is a good way to build those referrals even further, is really listening into what your customers most want, and supporting those customers can really bring big dividends in sales for very little cost.
Do you have any examples where you actually use the website to drive down the cost of customer service? So one of the things about customer service is if a user comes to a website and they see a phone number and they can't find what they need, then the very first thing they'll do is pick up the phone. What are some ways that you've moved some of the customer service over to the web to drop the costs?
Sure. Great question. Everybody's looking at that. In the customer service group that where I was helping them out, basically there's a couple ways to support that. Yes, putting a phone number on the website will drive some people. You still won't get the people who don't like to use the phone, like me. I'd rather email every company than pick up the phone. I hate phone customer service, even though that's what I did for a while. What I suggest is a couple things. One is, in all your phone messages, right, so a customer calls in your customer service line, they're going to have to wait for a few seconds easily, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, a minute. It depends on, obviously, how you staffed and what you're willing to afford. But what I did was put a message as soon as someone got in and drove them to our web self-service portal. So one option is, if you can manage some of those inquiries through a self-service kind of portal or website, that's a great way to drive down costs. And you can even tell people while they're on hold, hey, you probably could solve your problem if you went to blah, 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 / customer service. Now, you probably heard that if you called into to customer service phone lines. And that's one way to try and get some people to hang up. If they hang up, you save your $8 to $10 per call. He only paid whatever, you know, for them to call you if you have an 800 number. They get into web self-service and can manage things themselves. For example, in one client that I was working with, they had subscriptions, so it made tons of sense. You could drive them to an online space and allow them to change their address or renew or do whatever it was they needed to do. Most transactions could actually be diverted from phone to the internet. And we got a small percentage of people willing to do that. The folks who stayed on the phone really didn't want to have to go online. We actually skewed slightly older in one of our products, and so those folks didn't feel like they wanted to go online. But that's one way to try and drive down phone costs, is to encourage as much as possible your web self-service tool or whatever you can offer through your website. Put it on your bills, put it on your phone messages, you know, put it in email closing statements and those kind of those. What are those called? Those signature blocks, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Is it just another way to let people know that there's another way to get service?
You can estimate the ROI of an email self-service versus a phone call. There are still, and this is just, you know, some of the examples that I've used in talking to the potential clients. For example, pizza ordering on the web is still an impossible chore. I mean, it's getting better, but like you go to the Pizza Hut or Domino's Pizza's website, and so I'm not going to mention the URL, I'll just mention the brands to, you know, leave the innocent out there. And it's amazing how even some user experiences on the web don't lend themselves to moving the customer service over to the web from the phone, for example.
That is true. It sounds, I'm so glad you said that, actually, because the point I wanted to make that I didn't yet is that not every channel is right for your business or your clients. I mean, what you just brought up was, you know, it does not always work that way. And some businesses are just shutting off the expensive tools like, oh, answering phones and only offering email and web. You can really lose customers that way. I mean, we were talking here about retention as a good way to build your business and save money. You do not want to piss off your customers. You do not want to just cut off your nose. I mean, it just doesn't always make sense to force customers into a web self-service tool, for example, or into email. And in fact, damaging that relationship with that one customer how we said a minute ago, that one customer may influence, let's say, 20 future sales. You just don't want to make that kind of damaging assumption about your business. So really, you kind of got to approach it and figure out who your customers are, how they prefer to do business with you, and then figure out, okay, how can I do that economically? And it isn't always sending them to the web. That sometimes actually burns you more than it saves you money.
What I advise them, and I literally said to them, time the amount of time it takes to do the phone call, and then time the amount of time it takes them to go through an order on the web. And if there is a significant difference, then maybe you shouldn't be changing the touch point or the channel that the customer is coming through, because it's just it's ridiculous. If you have to spend 20 minutes submitting an order to Pizza Hut, for example, then that's a customer that's not going to come back.
I totally agree. One of my favorite mantras is make customers' lives easier. You want to retain customers and build relationships and make them tell others about you, make their life easier. So if you could cut that time in half, heck yeah, I'm using the website. If it's, hey, I can order in 30 seconds instead of, a minute on the phone, giving them my address and blah, blah, blah. Oh, you should definitely go with that. I mean, that's the kind of approach that people should really be looking at. How do I make customers' lives easier? Because we all want that. What person doesn't want some kind of simplification of process or billing or whatever it may be?
One other point before we end this podcast. You have on here this connection to employee retention. What are some ways that you did that with some of your clients to help the employees feel better about the work that they were doing?
Yeah, the connection between employee retention and client or customer retention is there, and it should be an equal sign. I mean, if you have got engaged, interested, happy employees, customers can feel that, whether it's through a phone, through an email, or whatever it might be. Customers can feel when employees are happy and positive. It's like, going to Kmart versus going to Costco. I mean, the employees at Costco, they're getting paid than anyone else working in that kind of store. They're getting great benefits. They like where they work. The people in Kmart, they hate where they work. I mean, they just, they're not getting it. And so a business focusing on really kind of caring about their employees first is really where all this starts, if you ask me. You can't talk about retaining customers and making them happy if you do not have happy employees. And so there's certainly a lot of ways to do that, and it's not just paying your employees more. Employees want a lot of different things, really. They want to feel satisfied. They want to feel recognized. There's a lot of things that humans want out of relationships and out of workplaces that can be provided that don't cost a lot of money. There's actually a book written about this, and there's 12 questions in the book. And if you in your workplace can answer positively to most of these 12 questions, you have a pretty happy, engaged employee base. And that book is called First, Break All the Rules. And it's written by Marcus Cunningham. And it really breaks down what are the 12 elements of that employee engagement. I have used this book firsthand, and it works like a gem. I am serious. If you can figure out how to address those 12 areas, like how do you recognize people, or have they heard from their boss in the last 7 days with any kind of feedback? Do they have a friend at work? There's 12 points that I can't speak highly enough about focusing on as a foundation with employees to really get to the end result of a better business, really a healthier business, healthier customer relationships. It all starts with employees.
That ends our podcast for this week. Thank you very much, Kim, for
You're welcome.
Appearing, so to speak, on our little show that goes out to 8 people. Her website is customersthatclick.com. I will be linking to it from usabilitycounts.com.